Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Chris Claremont, and I listen to Metal Geeks. You should, too.
Welcome, my friends, to episode number 161 of the Metal Geeks podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with...
It's Brutal Dave.
What's up, Brutal Dave?
I am tired.
Why's that?
Busy as hell.
You're in the middle... Well, let's preface and say that George motherfucking Tripses is not here tonight. That's why there won't be that many varying opinions. But he'll be back next time. He's had some work shit going on. So speaking of work shit, you've been setting up at the Sherwood Fair, right?
Yeah, Sherwood Forest Fair is now live, active, whatever.
Going on?
Yeah, happening.
Happening. It's what's happening.
It's what's happening. That is a Renaissance festival about 40 miles outside of Austin. And I will be there selling artwork and things with my artwork on for the next 7 weekends.
What are the dates of it? Do you know?
They are... So it started this last weekend, so March 2nd and 3rd, and it runs every weekend through April 21st.
Okay.
April 21st.
So if you're hearing this and you want to go, it's... A couple hours from Houston, but it's nearby Austin area, right? It's off 290, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've driven by before, but I've never been there.
Yep. If you've taken 290 to Austin from Houston, you have driven right by it.
That's right.
There's a good chance you didn't even know
that you drove
right by it. It's a little bit hidden, but if you know it's there, you know what you're looking for. If you're familiar with the Texas Renaissance Festival... this one is much younger, but they are celebrating their 10th year this year, which is so cool for them.
Right on.
They're much younger and, considerably smaller than the grounds at TRF. They haven't had 40 plus years
right.
to grow like TRF has.
They will.
But the grounds are beautiful. It's a really charming fair. I really enjoy it out there.
It's a fair fair?
It's a fair fair.
Do they have the same type of, activity? So like the...
There are some of the vendors and some of the acts, both, you know, music acts and the other
right.
performances. Some of them, there is some crossover, but there's going to be some stuff there that you won't see at TRF. The theming is a little bit different as well. Whereas TRF is at this point kind of an anachronism fair that mm-hmm. covers, you know, 1,000 years of history. This one dabbles in that as well, but they actually have a set theme. Because it's Sherwood Forest Fair, it's Robin Hood.
Right.
Specifically this year at the fair, it is the year 1198. So, and that's one of the things that they really play up at this one. There's actually a story. So when you go when you're inside the park, there's actually a story going on. And it was actually one of the things that I only visited the fair as a patron once before I became a vendor. But one of the things that impressed me was that they had those kind of immersive elements, that there was, I could tell just from a couple of things that happened through the day. I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't expecting it, but I came across things that said, there's a narrative that's going on here. If you care to follow it. And so they do that by several different of the events through the day, play off of each other. They're the events that happen in the morning affect what happens in the afternoon and then in the evening.
So the whole event's a LARP.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
So, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Texas Renaissance Festival, it's sectioned off. It's like Disneyland. Like each different section is a different part or mm-hmm. different era.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a Greek area,
yeah.
There's a German area, Polish area, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. And they're both fun. I mean, mm-hmm. I need to get out to the Sherwood Forest Fair one day. It's not that far. A couple hours?
Yep.
Eh.
It's not that bad. But they, so the cast of characters.
Yeah.
So TRF has their own cast of characters, but that one is more generally is kind of a, more of an atmospheric sort of a thing. They're, the characters are there and they have their personalities are doing their thing. At Sherwood, you'll actually run into the characters through the day at the park. Like you'll actually, there's a good chance you might run into Robin Hood or Friar Tuck.
I was going to ask, do they actually have like a Robin Hood? Is it just one guy or is it-
It's one guy who is Robin Hood. And there's, you know, a King Richard, there's a Friar Tuck, there's a Little John, there's a Will Scarlet. They've got the whole, you know, there's a Sheriff of Nottingham. They've got the whole crew.
Let me ask you, when you think Robin Hood, what's the first movie that comes to mind?
Man, either the Disney one or the Kevin Costner one.
Okay. I didn't think we were going to go there. The first one that comes to mind, yes, the Disney Robin Hood cartoon is one of my favorites, but Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Is it?
I go immediately to that movie. I watched that so many times growing up. Great movie.
I've actually only seen it a couple of times.
Yeah.
So that's maybe why I don't.
I love Mel Brooks. He's
there was a Robin Hood. There was a period as a youth when I was like really into Robin Hood. Mm. You know, I read books about Robin Hood. They did a made for TV movie. It was like a 2-part thing, if I remember correctly, that I really enjoyed. I don't remember anything else about it except that it was on TV and that I really dug it. I don't know who was in it, if any of them went on to be anybody or do anything.
Wasn't there there was a Robin Hood movie that came out this year that flopped, wasn't there? It was like Taron Egerton.
It was like a flash in the pan. I think I heard about it.
The guy from The Kingsman
was already out of theaters.
I remember the preview for it, but that's all I remember. I don't remember it actually coming to theaters, but
I actually enjoyed the Russell Crowe Robin Hood movie that everyone hated.
I don't remember that.
So this may have influenced me, but I actually watched it in Downtown Disney on my honeymoon. Oh. So that, you know,
maybe
we ended up watching a couple of movies. We watched that and Iron Man 2 because that was out at the same time. So that gives you kind of a time frame. But yeah, there was a Russell Crowe. It was like a Robin Hood origin story movie.
Was it called Robin Hood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that. I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was not. I think it was, if memory serves, it was a Ridley Scott movie, but it was
starting to.
It was not received very well, but I enjoyed it.
No,
so
interesting. Have you seen any movies recently?
No, not really. I don't think I started to watch The Ballad of Buster Scruggs on Netflix.
Yes,
I'm about 40 minutes into it at this point.
I got to tell you,
I just finished the Liam Neeson story.
Okay.
So that's the last thing I saw.
I liked it a lot. I like these anthology type stories.
Mm-hmm.
My only complaint about it, that's not really a complaint. So the first scene, which was Buster Scruggs, I wish he was there to narrate the whole movie.
I thought that's what it was going to be.
Yeah, me too.
I thought that he was going to be weaving all these tales together.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. Well, let me know after you finish it, because the last scene in the movie, I'd like to discuss it with you.
Okay.
Because I think maybe George has talked about it, but yeah, what the actual true meaning of that is very interesting to me.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so you'll find
I'll
out.
I'll have to get there.
It's a great movie, though.
So we started watching that, finished watching Haunting of Hill House.
Okay.
Have you finished
that? I have not.
How far into it are you?
Same place.
Okay, haven't made any progress.
No,
where were you?
Really busy.
Where did you say
episode 2?
Episode 2. Okay.
I know they announced another season of it already.
Yeah, it's going to be a different story.
Yeah,
which is good. I don't like this story has been told, and they don't need to do anything with it.
Same? Are they meaning the same characters, or just completely new?
New characters. It's going to be a new house, new family. All this.
That makes sense.
Whatever. Yeah, I think that's a better idea.
That's like what they do on.
American Horror Story.
But they bring, I've never watched all of them, but I know they bring some of the same characters back.
There is some crossover. I have seen all but the most recent season of American Horror Story at this point. And yeah, so there's some there are some character crossovers.
I want to preemptively apologize. We are drinking Coke Zero and Johnny Walker, White Walker, the Game of Thrones. So if we get progressively bad during this episode, we'd like to apologize now.
Also, the tinkling sounds that you might hear are...
Yeah. It's just damn good.
Yeah.
This is really delicious. I'm sorry. They released a new trailer for Game of Thrones, the last season, with season 8.
Yep.
I watched that yesterday. That looks pretty fucking epic.
I haven't watched it. I haven't seen beyond... I've watched like a season and a half of Game of Thrones. Yeah, that's all I've seen of it. So, it doesn't grab me like it...
I think we've had this conversation before. It took me a long time for it to actually grab me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my wife watched the first season before, and I was in the room sometimes when she was watching it. But it wasn't until a buddy of mine let me borrow his Blu-rays, and I was like, all right, let's really just dive into it. We spent like a Sunday just watching it. Once you start learning the characters and the story and what's going on, it starts to become more enjoyable because there's a lot of characters.
I feel like I'd rather read it than watch it is my sense. And I've started collecting the books, so yeah. I may work on that soon, but I'm not like super into the show or anything, which is weird because it seems like it's a thing that I should.
Yeah, I think you would really dig it.
Be into.
Actually, I have an extra, maybe like the fifth book, and I picked up on clearance at half price.
Which one is that? Which one's the fifth
Dance of Dragons, maybe?
Yeah, I don't think I have
If you don't
that
have one. That, I'll just give it to you.
Okay. In a similar tone, though, didn't get a chance to talk about this last time, I don't think, but the story has developed further today. New stuff is out about the Amazon Lord of the Rings
series. Oh, really? I haven't seen this
yet. Yes. So the story a couple weeks ago was it looked like the Amazon Lord of the Rings series was going to be about a young Aragorn.
Aragorn, yeah, I heard that.
Apparently, the new hints that they've dropped say that's not even possible, given the timeline. So the hints were... So all of the hints that they've dropped so far are maps. So the Twitter feed for the show is dropping these maps. And as time goes on, the maps get filled in more and more and more. So the big hint was... two locations whose names are different than the names fans of Lord of the Rings might be familiar with. Minas Tirith and Minas Morgul are shown on the map as, Minas Arnor and, I'm going to forget the other one now. I'm going to go blank on it. But it's their original names.
So this is
way before Aragorn was even born.
So what's going on
at this time period, the guess is now, is that this is the time period where the Witch King and the Ringwraiths and all the dark evil stuff come and start to take over outside of Mordor, getting into the Gondor
area. So would the One Ring even been crafted yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is sort of the time frame of maybe like the video games that have come out recently.
It's closer to that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's closer to that time period. I got to remember when exactly those take place. You're a ranger.
You're possessed by the guy who created the ring. I thought he was a ring race.
He's an elf.
Okay. You know way more about this than I do.
Yeah.
I should have had Sean over here.
Celebrimbor was the elf who forged the ring.
And that's the character in the game.
He's betrayed, and his ghost, like, possesses you, kind of.
Yeah,
it's sort of a symbiotic relationship.
Like Venom.
Yeah, sort of.
You're in the same body.
Same host.
Yeah, same host. Here you go. Those games are great.
You know what? I got the... second one,
yeah,
for Christmas last Christmas.
Oh, you haven't played it yet?
And I haven't played it yet.
Oh, man.
It's still wrapped up.
I've been playing... I'm so ready to be over this game, but I've been playing Kingdom Hearts 3.
you feel done with it.
I am so fucking done, but I'm here. I'm committed to get to the ending, and I'm really close, I think. But fuck, man. It's like, okay, you play for a while, and there's like 20 minutes of cutscenes, and you play for a while, and... I know they got to really tie up a lot of loose ends that they created, but this is the God honest truth. I thought I would enjoy this way more than I am.
It seems to be the impression that I've gotten all around.
Yeah.
Like, I've not played them, but from people I know who are looking forward to it, it seems like the general consensus.
But you know what? If this game came out when it should have, like 13 years ago, I would probably be all up in it.
Yeah. And that was going to be part of my observation from what I've watched from people I know who have been anticipating it. I feel like if it had just come out when it was originally supposed to, people would be happy with it. But I think that it's been too long and everyone's expectations and the hype and everything is just too high.
Yeah, the hype wagon was super high on this. And also, I think the game style, the gameplay, it's very fucking PS2. Everything about it, the menu system, the sounds, everything about it. I mean, the graphics look good. Don't get me wrong.
I was watching you play a minute ago, and you say the sounds are very PS2. Yeah, I can totally hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to show you, like, the pause menu, your inventory menu. It's like, fuck. They didn't change a thing, did they? I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong. I it's one of my favorite game series, but I don't know how much I enjoy this game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm here for the story, basically. I don't know. I'm looking forward to playing Metro Exodus. I picked that up when GameStop had like a extra 20% off used sale a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just sitting on my stack, ready to play after this game. You know, I love narrative driven first person shooters. You know,
yeah, I'm still
that's my jam.
When I'm playing games right now, it's Fallout 76.
You back to Fallout?
I'm still doing Fallout, and I've started playing Red Dead Redemption 2, but I just haven't made any further progress on it.
I tried. I'll probably go back to it eventually, but
I have, like, I'm into it. It's just I'm busy doing this other thing.
Right.
So
I got another buddy of mine who's, like, really into Fallout. I mean, people that are into it are super into it. So, but it's just not for me. I mean, and I'm okay with that. Not every game has to be for everybody, you know what
I
mean?
Well, and Fallout 76 is not that you're saying it is, but for anyone who's curious, I would not recommend Fallout 76 to somebody who is not familiar with Fallout. I don't think
it's very lore heavy, isn't it?
It can be. If you want it to be, then it's there. The lore is there. They've got a bunch of stuff that's tied in really well, and they've thought out a lot of things, and they're explaining the origins of some stuff. But I feel like if you went into this blind, you wouldn't get a really good feel for what Fallout is.
What would be the first, if I've never played a Fallout game, what would be the first one to go to?
If you're not going to go all the way back to the beginning, which most people won't, and I don't blame them.
That's a different type of game. It's a completely too. Different. It's like an overhead.
Yeah, it was that isometric kind of, like, if you ever played like Baldur's Gate or Icewind Dale, it was kind of like that.
Yep.
But if you're not going to go back that far, and like I said, most people won't, you don't have to. I'd say go Fallout 3 or maybe Fallout 4.
Okay.
I vote more Fallout 3.
I did play a little bit of Fallout. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4, but I did play one for a while.
Was it the one where you're around the Boston area?
No.
No, was it the one where you're in Washington, D.C.?
Maybe.
That was 3.
Okay.
3 was Washington,
That was an Xbox One game or 360?
Yeah.
It was last generation.
Yeah, last gen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the one I did play. Because I got tuckered into the hype of it. I'm like, everybody's playing it. I got to play it. And I played it. And I'm like, it's not really for me.
Yeah, it's,
whatever.
It's Skyrim with nukes. And
I mean, yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
But no, if you like lore heavy open world role playing games, then Fallout is cool. It's different than just about any other kind of role-playing game out there. However, I read the cover story of the last Game Informer for the new game that's coming out from the original creators of Fallout. Because, Bethesda runs Fallout now, but they didn't create it. The guys that started Fallout are working on what is it called? The like the Outer Worlds or whatever.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Sounds really fucking cool. Mm-hmm. The it was like I said, it was a cover story on the last Game Informer, and I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be really cool. The screenshots in the article look it looks great, and it sounds like it's kind of like Fallout in space with more of a sense of humor. It's kind of like Borderlands.
Oh.
In a way, but
I like that.
It's kind
style.
It's kind of like it seems like it's kind of a mix of the two. That it's kind of Fallout, kind of Borderlands.
So when you say Borderlands, you mean the game style, or maybe more of the
humor,
sense of humor?
Just from what I'm gathering, it seems like the humor is kind of and to a certain extent some of the themes. Because like one of the things that they talked about was that this was a very Borderlands thing. The corporations in the outer worlds are highly influential. And as a result, the brand of gear that you get makes a difference. So it's like this
that feels very Borderlands.
Very Borderlands. This corporation, their stuff works this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or this corporation stuff is very high end, very expensive, but it works very well. However, you can get the budget stuff from this corporation and it'll work, but it's probably going to break. And, you know, that felt very Borderlands.
So we talked about movies. I'm trying to remember if I've seen any movies. I think the last movie I went to, we talked about on the last episode we were going to this, but we went to Return of Nukem High, Volume 1 and 2,
right,
with Lloyd Kaufman there.
Mm-hmm.
Got to tell you, man, Lloyd Kaufman is fucking amazing. He's such a nice guy. We met him, like, between the movies.
Mm-hmm.
He was out there. He got there late. There was some kind of, like, airplane situation, but they got there a little bit late. And they had a table set up, and I brought my All I Need to Know About Filmmaking I Learned from the Toxic Avenger book that was written by Lloyd Kaufman and James Gunn. Yep. He signed the first page, which was really cool. Called me Crazy Carrie.
Crazy Carrie.
Yeah. He was really nice. Took a picture. So it was George was there and Justin was there. And he was just a nice guy in the movies, man. Okay. Did you ever see the original Class of Nukem
High? I've never really watched any of his movies.
You ever seen a Troma movie? Holy fuck, not really, dude.
No.
All right. So the only way to really describe a Troma movie, it's – you can't really.
Schlock?
It's super schlocky. Lots of tits. Lots of really funny stuff. Lots of weird gore.
Mm-hmm.
And it all sort of comes
like,
together.
Is it kind of like old Peter Jackson movies with tits? Like, is that...
Because
his old stuff was like that, too.
Maybe Dead Alive
like
or...
Bad Taste and...
Yeah. but those... No, these are so bad, they're good.
Mm-hmm.
They go totally around. So Return of Nukem High, they split into two different movies. And it had the best... cameo from Stan Lee.
Okay.
It has the best cameo from Lemmy because he was the fucking president in the movie.
He was the president.
The president of the United States.
All right.
And it had the best cameo from the angry video game nerd.
Okay.
So all three made great cameos. Stan Lee was basically the narrator of the whole fucking movie until he wasn't. And that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty great. If you had never seen like the Toxic Avenger or any of that kind of stuff, they're definitely worth watching. They're fun.
Okay.
Fun movies.
I remember I've seen like some clips from the Toxic Avenger. That's all I've ever seen. I also remember, do you remember when Toxic Avenger was a Saturday morning cartoon?
The Toxic Crusaders. I have a button on my battle jacket now for the Toxic Crusaders. That's right.
That is the most of my exposure.
Yeah,
was that cartoon?
So he was talking about that because they did a Q&A between the movies, and he was talking about the Toxic Crusaders. That a lot of the guys that worked on that cartoon are now like I don't remember who they were, but they've gone on to like wild success with stuff. He was talking about it's the only cartoon series that was on Saturday morning that was based on a superhero that got his powers from toxic sludge.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more, it was, had more, had better, what did you say? Had better meaning or better meanings in like, Captain Planet. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's true. It was very environmentally.
I remember it being very environmentalist.
Yeah. And it was very, very weird. And he talked about the whole James Gunn situation with Disney and all that. Yeah. He really went into that because basically the tweets that got James Gunn in trouble were started by Lloyd Kaufman.
Really?
They were going back and forth with each other on Twitter.
Okay.
He didn't really have a lot of nice things to say about Disney.
That doesn't surprise me.
No. But the weird thing, his wife was with him, and his wife has been the film commissioner of the state of New York for like 20 years.
Hmm.
It's pretty great.
I guess that's a good connection to have if you're a...
That's how they got the last movie made. Basically, yeah.
He was in at least one, I think maybe a couple episodes of Lloyd Kaufman was in a show called Oddities, which I think I've probably seen all of. I don't even remember what channel it was on anymore. It was some like basic cable program, and it was an oddities shop in New York City. And it was weird reality show. But they would have people come in looking for specific kinds of weird shit.
Right.
And they would either, you know, find it in the collection and sell it to them, or they would have to go out and try to find something like what they're looking for. But it was usually like the guests on the show were people who were like parts of like carnival sideshows and weird performers.
It sounds familiar. It was like, was it A&E or something like
might
that?
Might have been.
Off
But
channels.
I love that whole aesthetic. And so I watched, I've probably seen every episode of the
Lloyd Kaufman
show.
But
yeah, he was their guest in one of the episodes.
He had a cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Who was he in Guardians of the Galaxy?
When they were in the prison scene, one of the, right when they first got there, he was up on one of the upper levels. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's not like up front and center. It was kind of background character.
They focused on him for a little bit. Okay. I don't remember if he said anything or not, but he might have. You know.
Another guest on that Oddity show was the musician Voltaire.
I don't know
if you're familiar with
him. Yeah, a little bit.
He was one of their guests one time. He was getting he wanted a prop for a music video he was doing. So I'm a big Voltaire fan. Met him a couple of times.
I did. The other movie that I watched last weekend was the Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode of Mac and Me.
God.
Holy fuck. That movie is so fucking bad.
Yeah.
I don't remember it being... I remember probably watching it as a kid and not...
I never saw it when I was a kid.
I know
I remember. I remember seeing trailers for it when I was a kid. And being, like, excited about it. Like
every time that Paul Rudd goes on, maybe Jimmy Kimmel or
Conan O'Brien.
Is it Conan?
Yeah, I just watched, like, a supercut of this the other day.
He's like, every time, let's cut to the clip of your movie. And they show the scene of the kid going down the hill on his wheelchair.
And falling off the ravine into the river
and then
below.
All of a sudden, the weird alien Matt character is, like, pops up. Fucking creepy.
Yeah. Very unsettling.
I'm trying to think of what else to talk about. I think we're going to focus a lot of our topic on. We have some musical ideas. We're gonna still do a George Hates Metal, but we're gonna do a Dave Loves Metal.
Okay.
I have a band I want you to hear. Basically, is what it boils down to. And I think we're going to talk about what albums influenced us as a kid and what we grew up listening to. But before we get to that. I would definitely be remiss. Everybody on this show knows what kind of a fan I am of the Monkees. Everybody knows that. It's not a hidden secret anymore. I just wanted to, you know, give a little bit. A couple weeks ago, the week before last, Peter Tork from the Monkees passed away.
Yeah,
hit me hard, man.
I bet.
I was like at work. I just got to work. I was starting to scroll, looking through social media for stuff, and I saw the first headline. I'm like, nah, that's not right. And it took like another half an hour for like other news outlets to start picking up on it. I freaked the fuck out, dude. I was like not in a good place. And I've met the guy once, right? But when you're that much of a fan of somebody, it hits you harder sometimes than like losing a family member, which is weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it really did. Like, And I'll be honest, when Davy Jones passed away, it hit me, but it didn't hit me as hard. I wasn't as big of a fan of his style in the band. But, yeah, when Peter Tork passed away, man, that hit me hard. I knew he was sick for a while because he had a tongue cancer like 9-10 years ago, and it went away for a while. And he was touring for a while, and luckily I got to see him twice on when he was back in the band, which was, it was just really cool. And, you know, for the past 2 or 3 years, he hasn't been touring, hasn't been doing anything. Mm-hmm. And you can hear in his voice his, because he put a blues album out last year, and then he did a song on their Christmas album that just came out, and you can tell his voice is completely different, even from a few years before that. So I knew something was up, but he was very private. There's no need for him to come out and be public about it. It's because we're fans doesn't mean we deserve to know everything about a celebrity's life. You know what I mean?
Yep.
If you're sick and you want to keep it secret, that's your decision. You should. But on the last MSR cast, which just came out yesterday, we sort of paid tribute to him. We play Last Train to Clarksville from the band Ludachrist.
Okay.
Which is their cover version. Have you ever heard that?
No.
I'll have to play that for you. But yeah, so I just want to, you know, a lot of people reached out to me that day. Fans of the show reached out to me, you know, sending me messages about it. And I'm like, I know. It was a hard day, but I listened to a lot of his music. And, you know, he's definitely going to be missed. He was a funny guy, talented guy. He played like 5 or 6 different instruments, and he was super talented, man. But it's definitely sad. That's all I got to say.
Okay.
And now let's get something happier.
All right.
Let's get some get into our topic, and we're going to jam some metal. Back to the show. This was sort of our George hates metal, but it was more Dave loves metal.
So I do. Yep.
We do. Mm-hmm. So I picked a song anyways that we were going to play if George was here, and we just listened to it, and we're going to talk about it now.
So should we give our own opinion of what George would say about it?
We could do that. Let's talk about the song real quick.
All right.
So we heard a band called Black Therapy. The song we heard was called Phoenix Rising. It's on the for the upcoming album. Comes out soon, maybe March-ish. Their description, they're gloomy and sorrow-fueled melodic death metal with catchy melodies and a perfect balance of aggression and dark, doomy atmosphere.
Where are they from?
I don't know. I have to find that out. I think they're European for sure. Either Finnish or Swedish, I'm not sure. So let me get your
find out. So
okay. Yeah. We're looking that up. So why don't we go ahead and talk about what George would think about him?
What do you think? Would George like this?
You know, actually I think he would like this. It has enough melody into it. The vocals are on the harsher side, but it's not, they're still distinguishable, so I think he would possibly like it.
I would not have That would not have been my first guess for where
really?
They're from. Yeah, they are from Europe, but probably not where you'd think.
I'm trying to look it up. I'm trying to figure it out. Go ahead. Where are they from?
They are from Italy.
Really?
Yeah. It's a very Scandinavian sound.
It is very. Wow, you're right. Okay. They are from Rome, actually. Interesting. So yeah, this is their third full length coming out called Echoes of Dying Memories. I definitely recommend checking these guys out. They're on the same record label as Meadows End, who I am raving about recently, Black Lion Records.
It was very you asked me about, I don't know, 45 seconds into the song.
Yep.
Who I thought of. And to me, it was the first one that popped in my head was Insomnium. It has
definitely
Insomnium feel. You've suggested Dark Tranquility, which I can see that as well. So it's along those lines of melody heavy melodic death metal.
Yeah, where it's high quality mellow death.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy these guys. If I can just find more bands like this, I'd be happy. just any band like this, let me know, and I'm into it. So what do you think George would say?
I think he'd probably enjoy this. He surprises us, though.
He does.
So
he's brought some stuff to the table. I'm like, wait, what? Like Lick last year? Last band I'd ever expect him to listen to, but. You have the wide variety of interesting taste. Let's put it that way. But I think we're all in agreement that we liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed
it. And George would like it. So it was a rousing success.
Well done, Black Therapy.
Good job. Let's talk about our topic now. So we were trying to decide what we're going to do since George isn't here. And we tend to always go more metal heavy when he's not here for some reason, because both of us are big metalheads, and he always winds up talking about movies for a while. But we sort of trying to figure out what our topic was going to be, and we want to talk about the bands that inspired us. What's the first metal band you heard? What's the first black metal or death metal or any of that kind of stuff? What was the first band you ever really got into or were a fan of?
So we're talking metal specifically?
Doesn't have to be just metal, no. We can go there, but...
Because I was wondering, a little behind the scenes look here. We did no prep work on this whatsoever. It was
what? Really?
It was
us?
Just a thought that occurred between takes, basically.
Yeah.
And so here we are. So we don't really have ground rules laid out for what's going on here.
It's whatever comes to our mind.
So... Oddly enough, I guess, so we'll just kind of talk our music history, I suppose.
Yeah, sure.
Oddly enough, for somebody who is into music as I am, I didn't really consider myself as being particularly into music as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't start concerning myself with bands and artists and things of that type until I was in junior high school. Before that, it didn't even occur to me that it was something I should be interested in, or, you know, it was like a whole other world.
Right.
I guess the closest to like music that I was into as a kid, I actually used to put a tape recorder in front of my TV and record the music from Nintendo games, and then I'd go back and listen to it later.
So nothing wrong with that.
I was a chiptune fan before that was a thing. I guess.
Think I actually did that too. I had a little red tape recorder.
Mm-hmm. I had one of those like dictation tape recorders.
Yeah,
like is in like every movie ever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had that, and that would record the NES music.
I think that some of the first music I ever got into was probably because of my dad, because it was classic rock, or back in the day it was just rock. It wasn't classic yet. But, you know, stuff like this was on the radio. I mean, I probably didn't know any bands or anything, but whatever they played on classic rock radio, like, you know, my dad was really into ELO. Mm-hmm. But I think the first band that I was ever a huge fan of was, of course, the Monkees. And that was because of the MTV. In 1986, when they did the reunion, and they did like a 24-hour marathon of like the show. And I still have my video cassettes where I recorded it off MTV. Yeah, and my parents bought me the Greatest Hits cassette for my birthday that year, and that just solidified it. I'm like, yeah, I really like these guys a lot. And, you know, my dad's like, oh, you should listen to the Beatles and all that kind of stuff. And I did, but I didn't have an appreciation to the Beatles until later in life, truthfully.
I still don't have one.
Really? No.
So there we are.
Well, not everybody can be perfect. I was really into Weird Al during that time frame. The very first concert I ever went to, 1987, at the Astro World, whatever the was, a something amphitheater, Star Amphitheater, whatever it was called there. It was Weird Al, ironically, opening up for the Monkees on that tour.
How weird.
It was awesome.
I bet.
The main thing I remember about the Weird Al portion was him coming out and doing Like a Surgeon, and they had the whole setup. They were all in outfits, and they had the gurneys and all that. Yeah, I remember that for sure.
So how old were you?
Probably, so it would have been 87. I was 12 or 13.
Okay. So you were twice my age,
yeah.
At that point,
and
that's why I said when you proposed this as an idea, I started thinking about it, and I said our lists are going to be wildly different.
Oh yeah,
because when you're that young, a couple of years makes a huge difference.
Oh, it definitely does.
So our musical environments are going to be very different. The other thing is that my musical environment at home would have been drastically different from yours as well. We didn't really listen to anything that could fall under the greater umbrella of pop music.
Okay.
And I'm widening that umbrella out as far as it'll stretch. Anything considered pop music, we didn't really listen to much of any of that.
I'll admit, in the 80s, I really liked 80s pop music, like synth
pop
and
all
that stuff.
I'm not talking about pop music. I'm talking about everything that falls under that in the widest possible consideration. I'm talking rock music. I'm talking everything. Any kind of popular form of music, there was not really that going on in my house. My family listened to a lot of... So in the car, if we were listening to music, it was classical music.
Okay.
That's what we were listening to in the car. Now, I like classical music. I don't have a problem with it at all. I listen to classical music from time to time myself. But I didn't have a lot of exposure to a lot of what was going on out there. And that was in some ways intentional. I wasn't meant to know what was going on out there. So I didn't. And I didn't know any different until got to an age where people start listening, and like that starts to become an aspect of your personality.
Right.
When your musical taste starts to become an aspect of personality, and people would turn to me and say, well, what do you like? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. And so I guess on some level there was a degree of peer pressure that got me to look.
There's
that
always
got me to,
there is that when you're that age and you're, there is that peer pressure of, you should listen to this. I like this. You should listen to this. Mm-hmm. Me and my cousin would discover bands together. We would like, I don't know how we did it most of the time. Most of the time we would get like a Metal Maniacs or something, or like a Rip or whatever magazine. Let's check this band out. Let's look at this. And back in the day, of course, I was into Metallica. I was into Megadeth. I was really into Metallica in their early days, you know? But the first thrash band that really had a special place for me was Anthrax. Still does to this day, of course. Mm-hmm. But I remember, 89, dude, one of the bands that did it for me was Dead Horse, a local Houston mm-hmm. band. And it was like one of the heaviest things I'd ever heard, which go back and listen to it. You're like, oh, it's not that fucking heavy anymore. But me and my buddy Scott, who's no longer with us, we were hanging out at our friend's quinceañera for some reason. We were fucking bored. I had my tape player with me and like one pair of headphones that like split off. Mm-hmm. And we had a tape copy of a copy of a copy of probably, I think it was Rain in Blood. So Slayer, Rain in Blood.
Okay.
And we were, our minds were blown about how fucking heavy this thing was. Couldn't believe it. I made a comment to my wife the other day, something from Rain in Blood came on and I'm like, I remember when that was so fucking heavy. You could not believe how heavy that got. Does it get heavier than that? And
it's still pretty heavy.
It is, but it's not to the ultimate degree like I thought of was back in the day, you know? But I think
it took me a long time to get there even.
Oh, really?
Because think about up to this point, my exposure to music by and large was A, classical music, B, Nintendo video game music.
Very close to metal.
Which there are a lot. There definitely are.
Both of those, actually.
C, church music. Oh. Those were like that was what music was to me.
See, I don't know church music, but
as a kid, was those three things, and maybe like Saturday morning cartoon music, like throw that in the mix.
We thought we were so cool speaking of that Slayer, that quinceañera. We were at a church jamming Slayer. We thought we were so cool.
Very edgy.
We were edgy. We were like, so yeah. Edgy.
But so that being kind of the breadth of what I was exposed to music wise when. Like I said, you start coming of an age and that starts becoming an aspect of people's personality and they ask you, what do you like? And I'm like, I don't know. So I just started listening to what I knew people around me were listening to just to see what it was all about.
Yeah.
And at the time, that was a lot of like the local pop radio station. So I listened to that for a little while and didn't love it. But right. I was like, I guess this is what music is.
What year was that?
This was, God. Early 90s.
And God, I feel so much older than I was.
I know. See, you're like ancient.
So
I told you those few years are going to make a huge difference. Huge difference.
Because what? I'm 10 years older than you?
How old are you? I don't think you're 10 years older than me.
How old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay.
So if you were 12 in 1980.
I'm 8 years older than you.
There you go. All right. So, but I remember when I found music that I actually loved.
What was that? What was the first band?
There were two. And this was not a coincidence, I'm sure. These were also the two bands, two songs in particular, that made me go, I want to know how to do this. Made me want to learn to play guitar.
Was one of them Blind Guardian?
One of them was not Blind Guardian.
Oh, damn it.
No, that came much later.
Okay.
Much later. I flipped over my radio station because I got tired of listening to the pop music that everyone was listening to. Even then, it didn't really work for me.
Yeah.
I start flipping around.
But pop music in the early 90s was way different than the 80s.
Yeah.
It was crap by that time.
So I was rolling around and I fell on one of the rock stations, listened to that for a while. And there were two songs in particular that I remember made me go, I need to pick up a guitar and learn how to do this. They were Take 'Em or Leave 'Em, Collective Soul, Shine.
Yeah.
And Interstate Love Song by Stone Temple Pilots.
That's a good song.
Those two songs, I was like, I need to know how to make this kind of noise.
You know how it makes... I'm going to feel old. I'm going to make you feel young, I guess. But I saw Stone Temple Pilots on their very fucking first tour. They opened up for Ministry and Sepultura.
Weird.
It was and nobody knew who the fuck they were.
That's a bizarre lineup.
Just same year, like it's just like seeing the Clash of the Titans 1990. It was Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax co-headlining tour. So each night they would take turns. Who headlined, but they would all play the same amount of set. The opening band on that tour was like Alice in Chains. Became a big fan of them.
Yeah. So that gives you the idea of the time period that I'm talking about in. So It was that early grunge era was when that's when I became aware of music.
But the early grunge era was still fucking metal.
There was a lot of it. And so Alice in Chains very quickly got added to my list.
Yeah.
So I've been a fan of Alice in Chains and Soundgarden.
Yep, me too.
For like as long as I've known about music, basically.
I saw Soundgarden and Pearl Jam together in 91 or 92 at this club that used to be a grocery store.
Okay.
And I got kicked in the head by Chris Cornell when he was stage diving. I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
That's a good story, man.
It is. That was my brush with his fame. I got kicked in the head.
So yeah, that was most of my early music was grunge and grunge adjacent stuff for the most part. So yeah, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and then all the. So another big one for
Nirvana
me.
For me too. I loved Nirvana, like Bleach, and I liked the Incesticide album. Yeah.
So it was, of course, Nevermind was my first exposure to Nirvana because that was the big breakthrough.
Yeah, was that 92?
That was 91.
91?
91. Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure that's right. Because he died in 94?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't... It's weird to think about how fast that was now. Like, the short span of time that was.
I saw Nirvana twice during their career. I saw them once at a club in Washington. I can't think of the name. The Abyss? I don't remember what it was called back then, but it was a smaller club. And that was during the Bleach tour. And then I saw them on the Nevermind tour, and they were playing the Astor Arena. So it was like small club, huge ass place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the same club, I saw the Abyss. I saw so many fucking shows there, like Dead Horse, Gwar, so many good bands. I actually had a girlfriend break up with me because I told her I wasn't going to get in the pit. I didn't get in the pit, but I did a stage dive for the very first time ever at a Dead Horse show. And I came to school the next day with a black eye. I was like, oh, well, you caught me. Yeah.
Another, oddly enough, and there was a reason for this beyond just the music. Another one of my early favorite bands was Silverchair, actually.
Really?
Reason being, their first album came out.
Yeah.
They were all 14 and 15 years old.
I remember that.
And I was like 13.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, hey...
If they can do it, I can
do it. Right. And so, like, I was.
What was their song? I can't think of the name.
There were a few. There was Tomorrow was one of their big ones that off of that first album. But they had a few hits off of that first album. And then they had a couple off the second one as well, which I also really enjoyed. It was called Freak Show.
I don't think I remember that one.
I liked that one a lot. I listened to it. I listened to that album a fucking lot. But yeah, a lot of that was. That was because you're talking about music that inspired you.
Yeah,
that was music that inspired me because I'm like, hey, these guys are only like a couple of years older than me.
Yeah,
I can do this, right? And so a lot of my learning to play guitar was listening to Silverchair and Collective Soul and all these other bands, listening to their albums and trying to play by ear, play along by ear. And that was a lot of my early guitar training was I did that.
Back in the day, my best friend Scott, who I mentioned, who is no longer with us, and my cousin and I, we had a band together. We were called Gossamer, and we were named after the character from the Bugs Bunny show, not for any other reason.
Okay.
And we played a lot. We actually played one show ever at Zelda's, which is, you know, downstairs at Fitzgerald's. This was probably right after high school, so like 93, 94. No, it was definitely 93, yeah. And we were doing stuff like, we had some original songs, but we were doing stuff like, we did a Monkees cover, we did Valerie, we were fucking doing You Suffer from Napalm Death. We decided we would play it like 15 times in a row to make it. we were just doing weird shit like that. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So I guess I wrote a couple of notes now.
What was the first heavy? What was the heaviest band?
So that's where I was going next.
Okay.
So via that route, especially at that time, a natural next exposure point is Metallica. So
they were early for me.
I really liked Ride the Lightning. That was
87 when it came out, right?
No, Ride the Lightning.
86 or 87?
Not Ride the Lightning, because Master Puppets came out in 86 and Injustice for All came out in 88.
Yeah, I know Injustice was 88.
So Ride the Lightning was like 83 or 84. 83 or 84.
Wow, I guess so.
Yeah. But that was the... Now, it was at that time period, it was Black Album Metallica that was all over the radio and was everyone saying, I enjoyed that stuff, but it was the Ride the Lightning really got a hold of me.
I remember waiting in line for a midnight release for the Black Album.
Mm-hmm.
With a 91 that came out?
I think it was 91.
I remember, waiting in line to get that album. Because I heard Into Sandman. I liked it. But then the rest of the album, I'm like, oh, okay, what is this? But this is around the same time where a lot of those thrash bands from the 80s were trying. Mm-hmm. They were stepping out and trying new things.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Metallica, Ride the Lightning was a big deal for me. That was one of the first probably proper metal things that I listened to. I don't remember how much – it was a little bit later that my introduction to Megadeth was actually Euthanasia. That album. It was that late. Yeah, wow. It was Euthanasia.
It was 94, right?
Euthanasia came out in 90 – yeah, about 94, 93, 94, somewhere.
It's a great fucking album.
And that was the first Megadeth I heard was like Train of Consequences. That was – yeah. Isn't that weird to think about?
One of my top five albums of all time is Rust in Peace, 1990.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I love that album.
Yeah, that's one of the best thrash metal albums, if not the best thrash metal album ever.
So the first, the heaviest, you know, we talked about Dead Horse, we talked about like Slayer and shit, but my cousin somehow got a copy of, I think it was Obliteration to whatever, the Napalm Death album,
mm-hmm.
and then a Death album. Leprosy.
Okay.
Fucking changed me. I'm like, this guy's a fucking genius. This is the heaviest shit I've ever heard, but I fucking love it. And the other band was Obituary.
Okay.
Those first three bands were the heaviest, the death metal stuff that I got into. And I'm just like, wow, I fucking love this.
So I know where my switch over happened for me as well. So I had all these grunge bands. I had a couple of more mainstream metal bands, stuff that was getting played on the radio back then, Metallica, some Megadeth stuff, some Pantera stuff, things like that I was getting exposure to. But also happening at that time, I grew up in Dallas, and in the DFW area at that time. So I mentioned earlier that a lot of my exposure to music early on was church music and, you know, CCM, and which is contemporary Christian music for those of you who aren't initiated.
I did not know that.
That kind of thing. Well, happening when I was, you know, young teenager, you know, and through 16 years old, somewhere around in that area, the DFW area had dozens of these like Christian hardcore bands. And I got like really sucked into that scene. I was at all these different shows. Some of those bands were big influences on me as well. So what I had was I started listening to that kind of grunge and adjacent music, a lot of the alternative rock kind of stuff, started playing music, started learning how to play guitar. And I got very interested in guitar as a craft, as like, not just something that is expressive, but something that's worth refining. And so I also got very into like Joe Satriani and these like guitar virtuoso guys. And so through that, I got into like Dream Theater.
Me too.
Yeah, because like everybody in that band is like a virtuoso. Yeah. And so I was really into that at that time, was the really technical stuff. So I had like the emotiveness of the alternative and grunge stuff with the interest in the technicality in some of the thrash metal and some of the proggy, you know, that guitar wankery stuff.
For sure.
Then I had these like hardcore bands that were all around me that were just fucking intense. And it was only about the intensity. It was like, how intense can we be? Well, I found the moment that all of that came together was I was actually at one of these said hardcore shows, and there was a guy there who had a table set up, and he was selling these, it was all, cause like I said, it was a Christian venue, Christian bands, all this kind of stuff. So he was selling all these Christian alternative music CDs, and he had one that I thought the cover looked cool. Asked him if he liked it. He said, yeah, it's pretty good. And I picked it up on his recommendation, and it was Extol.
Oh, yeah, Extol.
Burial, their first album.
I interviewed them one time. And I didn't really know they were a Christian metal band.
Yeah. Yeah. From Norway. Yeah. And I took that home, put it in, listened to it once, put it back in the case, and it sat on the shelf for 6 months. I did not get it at all. Then sometime later, I picked it back up and put it in again, and that time it clicked. It was somehow a combination of all of the things I was interested in. It was emotive, but it was also highly technical.
Weren't they sort of thrash crossover type?
So that was the interesting thing, and I'll get to that. It was emotive, highly technical, and incredibly intense, and they were doing all of those at one time. And I couldn't grasp that at first. But once I did, that was the switch that changed me over into like more extreme forms of metal. So their first album is like a thrash black metal album.
Yeah.
Their second album was like a prog death metal album. Their third album was like a prog thrash metal album. Like every album sounded different, but it was distinctly them, and I was really into them, and they were really influential on me branching out and finding more extreme kinds of music.
You know, one of my favorite metal bands of all time started out as a Christian metal band. Yep, Trouble.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
They were a Christian metal band when they first started out.
So yeah, I was into.
Their first album was actually called Psalm 9.
Yeah. So.
Which didn't affect me because I didn't really give a shit about that. But
yeah, well, I mean, for me, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
At the time, the religious association was, number one, I was into it. Number two, it was what I could easily acquire without a lot of, scrutiny and that kind of thing. So there were all of these like Christian metal bands, and there's some that I will still listen to because they were good. Tourniquet.
I remember them.
Tourniquet could throw down, dude.
They were in like, Metal Blade, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember them.
Christian metal band, Christian thrash metal band.
Metal Church.
not. So this one was also important, not super heavy, but super atmospheric, had the whole gothic thing going on. Savior Machine. Did you ever listen to Savior Machine?
I feel like I know the name, but I can't place what they sound like.
I was huge into Savior Machine. They're kind of very goth heavy. And so that influence very much came from them. And there were some other like industrial metal bands like Circle of Dust and Clank. I don't know if you ever heard of any of those.
I have not.
Same thing. They were on these Christian record labels.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird. Like, even now, I can go back and look at some of those albums and be like, how did these guys make it onto a Christian record label? Because it's heavy, it's dark.
But they were Christian. That's all they had to say. So,
but the music isn't overtly. A lot
right.
of it. A lot of it is not overtly. And that was what was weird.
You got to think there's some guy at that record label who wasn't listening. He's like, are you guys good Christians? Yeah? Okay, I'll put you on my label then.
Yeah. I don't know what was going on. But there was a whole host of bands, Mortification and Paramecium.
Mortification, yeah. I knew them.
Right.
They were actually really good.
Yeah. Wow. Crimson Thorn. Crimson Moonlight was a Christian like black metal band from Norway and all that. They were pretty good.
Crimson, I guess, is the word you guys go with when you're
Christian. Well, I mean, it's color of blood, right? So.
True. But. I going back to like our first thing, I remember the first power metal album that I got into. Can you guess what band that was?
Halloween.
It is.
Good guess.
Because my mom used to take me to West Oaks Mall here in Houston, Texas, and there was a record shop in there, probably Sam Goody or whatever it was. They had a big, tall display of the pumpkin character.
Yeah.
For had Keeper of the Seven Keys 1 and 2. 2 had just come out. So my mom, she bought me Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1 on, I don't remember if it was CD or not, but that was my very first power metal thing. And then I was, you know, of course, I was huge into Iron Maiden and stuff like that. The very first CD I ever bought was Slayer, Show No Mercy at that store. And it came with, remember, it came in the long boxes and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to remember what my first CD was. And I'm between, like, three different things as possibilities. None of them are flattering. God.
You know, I think I still have that album, too, that Show No Mercy, my original copy. Yeah. It's beat up to hell, but I still have it.
I bet. Yeah, I'm not going to remember what my first one was. But, yeah, I mean, I was into a really wide array of sounds and everything. It was that Extol album that kicked me over into
me
understanding
too.
Extreme metal.
So. I was, me and my buddy Scott, back in junior high, I had a copy of a copy of a copy of License to Ill. Fucking, I still love the Beastie Boys, you know? And I think we got into them because we're like, the dude from Slayer is on this album, man. It was like one of those type of things. Yeah. But we learned all the lyrics. This is stupid. We learned all the lyrics to Paul Revere. And we would just go to gym class and like do that song together. So stupid. I don't know why we were doing that, but we were doing that and then collecting bringing out our Garbage Pail Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I forgot that part of my story going along this line was at some point in there, I also got introduced
to the Garbage Pail Kids soundtrack.
No, to like Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd somewhere along there as well. And that was actually via my youth minister, oddly enough.
I liked Pink Floyd back in the day. I am still going to, this is might be an unpopular opinion, I'm still not a Led Zeppelin fan. I can appreciate them. There's a couple songs that I actually dig that they're okay, but I'm not a big Led Zeppelin fan. Never have been.
There's a lot. I'll admit there's a lot that I don't love, but the stuff that I like, I really like. And they were very influential on me as far as getting exposed to stuff that I didn't know was out there. And oddly enough that it came from my youth minister was really weird, because at the same time that my youth minister was giving me Led Zeppelin albums to listen to, the private religious school that I was going to was showing us the Hell's Bells documentary, which if you've not seen, do yourself a fucking favor and go find it on YouTube, because it's a riot. It is satanic panic stuff.
Oh, really?
At its best. They used to show it to us annually at school. And I think it had the reverse effect on me than was intended, but it was like, cause it's all about, you can probably tell from the name, the documentary is called Hell's Bells. It's all about the dangers of rock music and how it's going to take your soul.
That would totally be the opposite for me. So I'm thinking another band that really had a big influence on me back when I was young is Suicidal Tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking huge fan of ST. Lights, Camera, Revolution, one of my favorite albums of all time. How I Left Tomorrow, Join the Army, all those fucking albums, dude. I'm fucking huge fan of early-ish Suicidal. Even the new stuff I really dig, not as much, but I still do. I remember seeing Suicidal Tendencies with Infectious Grooves opening up. It was like playing double duty. That was amazing. Man. It's just so weird how we're talking about these bands And it's that small time difference, like you said.
Yeah. It's just a couple of years, but it makes a huge
8 years, but it's a long time.
In the grand scheme of things, that's not that long.
No, but in the grand scheme of this, it really is.
It makes a huge difference.
I was going to concerts in 1990, 1989, you know, with my first metal shows.
I was 7 and 8 years old
at
that time. Yeah.
One of my very first concerts I went to was at the fucking Summit. My parents dropped us off because we were really into Skid Row at that time, right? And Skid Row was opening up for Bon Jovi. We were too good for Bon Jovi. Even back then, we were like, oh, fuck this band. So we went to go see Skid Row. We left, went to like some hotel that was next to the Summit somewhere. And there was some guy that was hanging out there. He's like, hey, guys. Hey, kid. Do you want some beer? We're like, sure. That was not a smart idea. Yeah, so trying to think of some of the early. I saw Pantera back when they were before Cowboys from Hell came out. Operation Rock and Roll. You ever heard about this tour?
Mm-mm.
It was Dangerous Toys, Metal Church, Alice Cooper, Motorhead, and Judas Priest. It was 1990 because Painkiller had just came out. Another band that was influential for me was Judas Priest, man. Still to this day. But that's the last time I've seen Metal Church was 1990. And they're coming here soon. I had tickets for the last time they came, but a family emergency came up actually as I was driving to the concert venue. So that's why I actually got a buddy of mine who was opening the show actually got me a signed drum head. Mm-hmm. But I'm going when they're coming. I think it's in April. I have not seen them in fucking 30 years, man.
Yeah.
That's really scary to think. But yeah, I'm going.
So you mentioned earlier your first power metal experience was Halloween. Mine was Blind Guardian.
Oh, I bet.
You were close when you called Blind Guardian. And that happened because I was getting into all this music, and I had been introduced to the Lord of the Rings. And as has been mentioned just tonight, I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. It was highly, highly influential book on me. And I know that that's almost like a hokey thing to say at this point.
Did you freak out when you found out there was a band that did a concept album about Lord of the Rings? You're just like,
yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. Cause
where has this been all my life?
Basically. Cause, I was really into Lord of the Rings and, it was weird when I say, like, it's kind of a hokey thing to say that Lord of the Rings is as influential on me as it is. But the time in my life when I read it, it opened the world that he created felt real enough that it created in me an interest in the actual world around us. And so, like, oddly enough, via Lord of the Rings, I got into actual real world history
and walking
and language and what
you started going for long walks,
started going for long, long walks through the wilderness. I became interested in a lot larger ideas as a result of Lord of the Rings of all things.
I can see that.
It was highly influential on me in that way. And so I was in the infancy of the internet. I was searching around. I was looking, hey, I wonder if there's any bands out there that make music about Lord of the Rings, because I'd like to hear it, and stumbled across Blind Guardian. I've told the story on the show before, maybe on MSRcast, but that's how I stumbled across Blind Guardian on mp3.com.
Wow.
And I listened to the song Lord of the Rings and then Nightfall from Nightfall in Middle Earth. And I was like, what is this? And I was hooked.
I think Nightfall is their best song, one of their best songs.
You think so?
I think so.
I don't even know if I consider it one of my favorite songs of theirs.
Really?
I certainly did then, but wow. I loved it then. And I mean, it's a good song, but I just got so into them and all their material. And so they were an introduction to more of that kind of metal music. And so, you know, related to them. I probably was into Blind Guardian before I was into Iron Maiden, probably.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
And But they were kind of the introduction. As far as I can recall, they were kind of the introduction to that kind of sound.
The first time I saw Iron Maiden was 1990, No Prayer for the Dying tour with Anthrax opening up on the Pot tour. That was my parents dropped me off at the Summit. Me and my best friend Scott. It was amazing.
I'm trying to think about early metal concert experiences.
I know I went to a lot of them. I don't remember them all, you know? There's like certain ones that stick out.
That was, man, I don't know. See, I went to stuff like G3. Familiar with the G3 tour? I went to
Satriani and Stevie
Vai. The first one I went to, Kenny Wayne Shepherd opened.
My dad was really into him.
I was into him really for
a
little
while. Wasn't he blind?
Kenny Wayne Shepherd, no.
Who am I thinking of?
He was just really young.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
He was like 16, 17 years old when he got famous. And then like Derek Trucks came in like right behind him and stole his thunder, basically.
I don't know who that is.
Derek Trucks was another blues guitarist who was even younger than Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Great.
So he kind of like stole his thunder. But Eric Johnson was supposed to have opened that tour.
Okay.
He had opened the first leg of the tour, and I wanted to see Eric Johnson at that time. I went to stuff like that. I saw weird stuff.
I did too, man.
Like, I ended up at a Ben Folds 5 concert with my best friend. He was really into them. I never got into them. But saw Ben Folds 5. We did some of the like festival shows, you know, like the stuff that's put on by the local radio station, that like the all day events.
So I'll tell you, I went to a lot of concerts with my friends because my dad and my mom would just give me the Foley's credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Foley's used to have a Ticketmaster in them.
Okay.
So I would go to the store. I'm going to go buy some whatever clothes or whatever. And I'd buy tickets for concerts. I was like, hey, you want to go to a concert? Let's go. We'll go buy tickets.
That's ridiculous.
My mom knew what the fuck we were doing, but my dad, I don't think he ever knew. My mom's like, yeah, I'll just tell him we bought you clothes or some shit.
Wow.
But I went to a lot of shows that I probably would never went to. I remember seeing like Skinny Puppy back in the day. I saw Nine Inch Nails back in the day.
That's pretty cool.
A bunch of bands. It's just like even bands like Violent Femmes I wound up seeing many, a couple times. I'm like, because I had friends that weren't really into metal. They were into other stuff. So I would go to shows just because I liked going to concerts,
I saw Van Halen with Gary Cherone.
Oh, no shit.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I tell you, I was a huge fan of Extreme back in the day. Yeah. That's the band I've never seen. I've never seen Van Halen.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only time I seen Van Halen was with Gary
never
Cherone.
Never seen him. How was that?
I was like 16 at the time. I had a great time.
I saw Iron Maiden with Blaze Bailey.
I mean, you know, Eddie played Eruption, so I was happy, you know. So
I saw Iron Maiden without Bruce Dickinson.
That's weird.
With Blaze.
That's weird, too.
That was at a smaller place. Like, Fear Factory opened up that show.
Okay.
Yeah. That was maybe... was that 98?
I had a friend in high school, and her dad worked for Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola was the primary sponsor for the Starplex Dallas. It's been like five different things since then at this point. But at the time, it was the Coca-Cola Starplex. Because her dad worked for Coca-Cola, he would get tickets to all kinds of stuff that came through there. And so I went to a show there with her because nobody else would go. Went and saw with her Dokken, Cinderella, Slaughter, and Poison.
Okay. What year was this?
Later than it should have been.
Oh. Okay.
Let me put it this way. CeCe DeVille had been kicked out and had recently come back. That's how late we're talking.
Fresh out of rehab.
Yeah. CeCe DeVille is fresh out of rehab. And for some reason, they gave him a guitar solo section during the set. And it was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
I never really was a big Poison fan, but Dokken I like.
Mm-hmm.
Slaughter were pretty good. Who was the other band?
Cinderella
I like. They're actually really good. Maybe not now. But
it was a weird experience.
I'll tell you, I've always been I was a fan of Faster Pussycat back in the day. They were one of my favorite hair metal bands. I'd never seen them live. I went and saw them live last year. Uh-huh. And it's so fucking weird to see guys in their 50s acting like they're in their 20s. Mm-hmm. It's fucking strange.
Well, it was really weird. It was for good, me. Though. It was really weird for me as like a high school kid sitting there watching Poison and all these bands play. And like while Poison is playing, they play Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Yeah. Of course they did. And I'm looking around me as they're playing the song, and I'm watching women in their 40s, which, again, I'm in high school at this point. So, like,
panties dropping?
Like, there were women with their tits out crying while they played Every Rose. It was like, this is the weirdest fucking thing I've ever seen.
So let's finish up this topic. I have one last question to ask you. What is the band you've seen the most in your life? What band is that?
I'm not certain. Maybe Megadeth.
How many times is that?
Fuck. I don't know.
Can you count them on one, two hands?
It would take two hands.
Yeah. Maybe me too. I've seen them a lot.
Maybe Megadeth.
Maybe not the most.
Maybe Amon Amarth.
Really?
I've just gone to see Amon Amarth a lot, I guess.
For me, I bet you can guess one of them.
Anthrax.
Yep. I have probably seen Anthrax in my lifetime close to 20 times.
So at the Slayer farewell
tour
that happened last year, that was my first time to see Anthrax.
Wow.
I've never seen them before.
Wow. And the other band for me would probably be Iron Maiden. I've seen them many times.
Only seen them once.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was at that Cynthia Woods show. You were there a couple years. Oh, God, what was that, like 6 years ago now at this point?
We're going in September to see
them. We are going as well.
Yes. Yes. So. I don't think I've ever missed an Iron Maiden show. I've never missed an Anthrax show. I've missed one Anthrax show when they were opening up for Volbeat. And I couldn't get tickets from like my normal.
Anthrax
like,
was opening for Volbeat?
Yes.
That's a crime.
I know. And then I looked at the set list. They're only playing five songs. I'm like, I could not justify paying whatever it was to see them play five songs. I'm like, nope, can't do it. Those are definitely seen those two the most out of any bands in my life. What's the one band? Okay, one more question. What's the one band that's on your bucket list to see?
That's still a possibility?
Yeah. Even if you had to travel to Europe or halfway around the world to see them, who would this be?
God. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. I'll tell you who it is right now.
Okay.
Because I'm totally shifting gears here because I can't properly answer your question. sorry. I am dying to see Soen live right now because I cannot stop listening to this new album.
Yes.
Fuck, it's good. It may, like, I may be able to call now that it's my album of the year. I'm not sure.
Oh, fuck, really?
Fuck, I love this album. It speaks to me.
They weren't here recently? No, I guess I'm thinking of Leprous that was here
last year.
Okay.
They didn't play, I don't think they played Houston. I think they played.
No, they did.
They did? Yeah, I thought they played Austin.
They played Warehouse Live.
There was some other reason why I couldn't go. Was it when they came with Haken? Was it that tour?
No, it was before that.
Haken, the Haken tour they played.
Yeah, they didn't come here with Haken.
Okay.
It was before that. A Haken or however you want to call them.
Yeah. But no, I would love to see Soen with Leprous. That would be an amazing
show. That
would
be awesome.
But no, I'm loving this new Soen album a lot.
I will tell you, we're trying to see one band per year on our bucket list type of thing. This year for us, it's Avantasia.
Okay.
Last year for me was Halloween.
Yeah.
Well, I had to travel to Chicago to see Halloween. We're traveling to L.A. to see, or Anaheim, to see Avantasia. But the one band that I would fucking travel for, she just said it, it's Arion. I would love to fucking see them live, but he doesn't play out of his own country.
Okay.
Did the travel.
That's quite a endeavor. And that happened then.
Yeah, they did some shows last year, but they sold out like that. I'm like, I need more time to plan something like that, you know? I can't just buy tickets and then try to get to Netherlands, you know what I mean? I don't know. I'd love to see them live, but
you know who I'd love to see? And so this one is kind of crossing the line because it's kind of a possibility,
mm-hmm.
but not really. I would love to see Emperor. They still occasionally get together and
say
perform
something?
As Emperor. What?
I've seen them.
I'm sure you have. I haven't. And I would love to see Emperor as Emperor.
Guess who opened up for him? I caught him.
Okay. All right. That's weird.
And I went to the Sound Warehouse next door before the show, and they were doing an in-store.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a poster signed by them that I sold a couple years ago for some money. But, yeah.
I don't know that that's my final answer, but that's one not that's to, like, I would love to see.
A buddy of mine, player. Troy, who we just saw in Chicago, he's from Bloodthrone, right? The band Bloodthrone.
Mm-hmm.
He just traveled to that Norwegian festival that Emperor put on.
Okay.
And he said it was fucking amazing. And I was like, damn, man. That'd have been awesome.
Yeah.
His Lepers played. It was like a family affair, you know what I mean?
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen a lot of bands that I never thought I would probably see, you know, Milwaukee Metal Fest, New Jersey Metal Fest, that type of stuff, you know. Sometimes they get to play like 20 minutes, you know, but
yeah.
I still got to see some cool bands in my life. But it's been a good segment.
And we're out down memory lane.
And I think we're going to remember a lot of shit. Oh, fuck. As soon as we go to bed tonight.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You're laying in bed and you can't, I should have said that.
I'll have to remember to put it in the memoirs.
That's right. All right, let's wrap up the episode. We'll be right back.
Hi. We're back.
What's up?
So,
that was a great conversation about music and
there's so much left untold.
Yeah,
there's so many depths still to plumb.
That's definitely true.
I think you were right when you said that, like, as you lay your head down to sleep tonight and be like, I should have talked about.
Yep. So since George isn't here, he has a segment he created called What's Tickling Your Geek. So we can talk about that real quick.
Okay.
I have something. I just finished the last two episodes of The Orville. And they're fucking amazing. This show, the season, you know me, I am the furthest guy that would be a Star Trek fan.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek is not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to watch Star Trek, it would probably be Next Generation. And fuck, the Orville is just a complete love letter to that show, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely sure because I haven't watched every episode or whatever, but I freaking love the Orville. These last two episodes, they had I got to look up what the name of them was, but one of the characters on the show is called Isaac, and he's basically an android from an android planet, and they had this whole two episode arc about it, and it turned into this whole space dogfight at the end. It was amazing, man. It was like the best TV. I was just enthralled by these episodes. I cannot recommend this show more. I don't know how many episodes are in this season, but I'm trying to look it up right now.
I haven't watched any of it.
I think you would really dig it, truthfully.
Seth MacFarlane wears on me. Which is honestly why I haven't given it a chance, is like, the guy is talented and funny, but he gets old quickly to me. So
I can see that. But there is definitely comedy in this show.
It's weird that, like, how they pitch it, because it's like they really play up the comedy, but from my understanding is the show itself doesn't rely on that so
no,
much.
No, not really. But there is comedic parts to it. So the last two episodes were called Identity Part 1 and 2. And it looks like there might be two or three more episodes this season. So, wow. I thought it was like season finale already. It was that good. I'm excited. I absolutely adore the show. The characters are great. It's funny. It's smart. It looks great too. I'm surprised Fox hasn't canceled it yet. Just saying.
So you're saying it's worthy of Fox canceling it. That sounds like high praise.
That's how good it is. Yeah. Fox is not, it should have canceled it already. Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely recommend The Orville. If you're listening out there and you have not seen it, even if you're not a Seth MacFarlane fan, I think he does a great job in the show, actually.
I know that he loves the source material. I know he loves the source material, so, I don't know. I feel like it's probably one of those things that I would eventually, like, throw on in the background while I did other things.
I honestly think you would actually really like this show.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I think it's, I sort of know your style a little bit, and it's not a Family Guy episode, okay?
Right, yeah. So I got you.
And I like Family Guy still.
I did for a while.
I still do. We still watch it. I don't know how often I laugh, but we still watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that Seth MacFarlane brought Cosmos back. I'll give him that.
Right, he did. I forgot about that.
I'll give him that.
And now he's fighting in space.
Yeah.
So what's tickling your geek?
I guess I've kind of already mentioned it, was that the Outer Worlds game. Since I read that article about it, I'm really looking forward to it. It sounds like a lot of fun. Alternatively, if we're talking about shows we've recently watched, I'm still geeking out about The Haunting of Hill House. My wife and I still talk about it regularly, like, what do we think certain things meant? And it's so layered with meaning. And to me, I told you after the segment cut, that I felt like this is one of the best TV watching experiences I think I've ever had. It's one of the best written shows I think I've watched.
I need to get back into it then, for sure.
It's really well done storytelling. And I actually was telling somebody else about it this weekend, that to me, like, it's a ghost story, but really it's a family drama wrapped up in a ghost story.
Like Ghostbusters 2.
Not like Ghostbusters 2.
Nothing like that.
Nothing like that. No, the story really is about the characters. Mm-hmm. It's about
I could tell that.
And their relationship with each other. And God, it gets heavy. The show gets really heavy at times. But then they do the horror sequences so well. And so it all comes together. Like I said, the final episode, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It wrapped things up really well. I don't feel like it was written as strongly as the rest, but I think a lot of it was just that they were trying to wrap things up. And it's kind of, I could see why that would be difficult to do. But even once it was over, it left us with all kinds of ponderings and questions, but in a way that you're satisfied with. Like, not in a way where you go, well, why didn't they talk about that? Or why didn't they deal with this thing? It's not that feeling. It's a, man, that was great. Hey, so what does that mean? How does that reframe my understanding of things that already happened? It changes your interpretation of things. And
you don't have to sell me on it. I'm going to watch it.
I'm not selling you. I'm selling other people. But I loved this show. And so I guess I'm geeking out that they're going to do more.
Yeah,
going to be more
season 2 announced, but it's separate.
It's a new story. Yeah. It's a new family, new house, whatever. I just hope they keep the same creative crew because they did a killer job. Some of the, like I've mentioned, the writing and the directing are really good. Some of the performances that there are a few scenes in particular that I'm thinking of that some of the performances from some of the actors are some of the best I've seen.
Wow.
There's a particular scene where, and it's one cut. So it was done in one take.
I love that stuff right there.
The groundskeeper character, he tells his story And it's all, like I said, in one take. And from what I understand, it was the fourth take that they did. And after the third take, the director told him, I think we've got what we need, and we can piece this together out of the takes that we've already done. But if you want, we can do another take. And the actor said, yeah, let's do one more. And it was one continuous take, and it is him telling this heartbreaking story. And the emotion pouring out of this guy is unreal. Wow. Like, he sells this story. And apparently the story is that when they cut, he got a standing ovation from the crew, that everybody on set was that impressed. They were like, oh shit, what did we just watch?
I need to put this, I mean, it's on my list. I need to finish watching it.
There are several scenes where I feel like the performances are that level where you just stop and go, wow. There's some that's not so good. There's some bad acting sequences as well.
Let me ask you this. Netflix tends to have, I started watching Umbrella Academy, which I really enjoy too.
Okay.
Netflix tends to do this with their shows. They stretch out a show to 10 to 12 episodes where they could have done it in 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Is The Haunting of Hill House like that?
That argument could be made, I guess.
Because a lot of the Netflix Marvel stuff was like that. It's like, yeah, dude, y'all could have cut this down by 4 to 5 episodes. Then it would have been a much better show.
Yeah. I think that some people might make that argument. I don't agree. I think that it is the length that it should be. Maybe give or take an episode.
How many episodes is it?
It's 10? 10 or 11. I can't remember exactly, but it's 10 or 11. If I was going to be taking episodes away, maybe one at the most. And I'm not thinking of an episode in particular. I'm just thinking of time, just that amount of time.
Parts from different episodes to cut down.
But what happens is, because of how the story is told, like, time is weird in this thing that the story is told where it jumps back and forth. So you get like what's happening now and what was happening then. And that's actually how they refer to it in the show, is now and then. But even inside that framework, there's questions about, well, when did this scene happen in relationship to other events that happen, right? And as the story progresses, they keep – I'm trying to think of how to explain what I'm trying to get across. Certain scenes you see several times over.
From different perspectives, right?
But it'll be like, this is the same scene, the same way we saw it before, but it's 30 seconds longer this time. And what happens in that 30 seconds is significant.
Mm-hmm.
Or it happens from a different angle. Or it happens from somebody Lost else's do that? Perspective.
I feel like Lost did that at one point.
I don't know if I watched enough of Lost to really... I wouldn't make that comparison to this. Okay. Just from what I saw of Lost, which was... I watched like the first 3 seasons of Lost. But it is like you'll get it's the same scene as you've already seen it. Which is kind of unsettling in its own way. Because I'm like... we've seen this before, right? And I was like, I think I've seen this a couple of times already. But even the part you've already seen, the meaning of it changes because you have new information now, right? And so because of the way they tell the story in a cycle like that, I don't feel like the length of it takes away anything. I feel like all those trips back through the timeline, so to say,
mm-hmm.
give it further meaning. That, yeah, I've seen this before, but now I understand what's happening. And then you see it again and go, okay, now I really know what's happening. I felt like it was a brilliantly written show.
One of the, I guess, tomorrow night we're going to go see Captain Marvel.
I'm going next Tuesday.
So that's the other thing I'm sort of just tickling my geek right now. I don't care about any kind of controversy about the movie.
I
just want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks fucking great. Who cares I've always been a fan of Carol Danvers.
I don't care what internet edgelords think.
Fuck them. Yeah. The last thing, we have two more pieces of, I guess, what we need to talk about before we wrap it up. I want to talk about Comicpalooza a little bit.
Okay.
Have you looked at the guest list yet?
A little bit.
You're going to be there, right?
Yeah.
All right. You're going to have a booster?
Yeah.
So if people want to come find you, Comicpalooza, which is May 10th through 12th at the George R. Brown in Houston. So some of the guests announced so far, a couple people from Star Trek, Gage McFadden and Michael Dorn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for Peter Serafinowicz, who is the current Tick on the Amazon series.
Mm-hmm.
Along with him, you also have Griffin Newman, who is actually Arthur on the show, and like three other characters from the Tick. We have people from Lost. They just announced John Barrowman, who is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Always puts on a good show. Another one that I'm excited for, Timothy Zahn was announced.
Yep.
The author. Great Star Wars author. Create one of my favorite characters in the Star Wars universe, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually returned to those characters recently. I'm going to get my new book signed by him. That'll be fun. Who else are you looking forward to? You looking at it?
Yeah, I'm looking through the next gen.
Cory Doctorow. You know who he is?
An amazing author. He's a writer. Yeah.
Yeah. His first book was called Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom.
I didn't know that he was coming.
Yes.
Didn't know that. So that's pretty cool.
I'm excited for some of the comic book people. Jerry Conway, very, very famous guy. And a little author, writer. His name is Chris Claremont. Ever heard of him?
Yep, I have.
He wrote the X-Men for 17 years straight. This guy is fucking legendary, man. He created most of the... But name an X-Men character that wasn't created by Stan Lee, and he probably created him. So, New Mutants, Sabretooth, Mystique, Kitty Pryde, Rogue, Gambit, list goes on and on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty crazy. And I've actually interviewed him before when he was at Comicpalooza, like 2012 or 2013. He asked me if I wanted to interview him. I was like,
that's funny.
Yeah, sure. So if you heard his voice at the beginning of this episode, that's where it's from. The last thing we need to do on this episode is talk about our sponsors.
Excuse me.
The last thing we need to do on this episode is talk about our sponsor, which of course is
Tantrum Collectibles.
That's right. And I just spoke to Alpha, who is the guy who runs Tantrum Collectibles, and they're going to be doubling down on some Funko Pop. That's what does really well for them. They're trying to get their hands on some rare stuff, things you can't get anywhere else, all that kind of cool stuff. So if you're looking for Funkos and you want to save how much money?
10%.
10%. You need to go to tantrumcollectibles.com, put in the code MetalGeeks when you check out, and you're going to save yourself 10%.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for creating that special code for us. So let's wrap up the show. Let's let everybody know where they can find us on all of our social medias. Of course, MetalGeeks.net is the home for the show. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at MetalGeeks. You can find, of course, our sister show at MSRcast, at MSRcast on all the social media platforms. You can find us on iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Let all your friends know about it. Where else? There is ESO Network. ESONetwork.com, which is the full network now. So you can actually subscribe to that feed, and all the shows that are on
cool.
in the ESO network are going to come straight to you. So you can search all your podcast catchers for that as well. Love being part of the ESO network. It's great. You can find us on Spotify, on Stitcher, all those kind of places. I'm working on a couple more right now. I've submitted a few more, so we're going to be out there even more. And where can they find you?
Red Viking Dave, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And for the next 7 weekends, as of now, you can find me at Sherwood Forest Fair outside Austin.
That's right. And of course, you can find
see me in my giant wizard hat.
You can be speaking with an accent?
Aye.
Aye.
That I will.
Ah. Of course, you can find our other co-host, George, at Grey Bear Comics on all the social medias. I think that's it. Am I forgetting anything?
Keep it metal.
I forgot about that.
Yep.
That whole segment in the middle just totally threw me off. You know what? I will keep it metal.
Good.
Thank you for the reminder.
You should also keep it geeky, my friend.
I might do that as well. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we have a sneaking suspicion that you don't actually listen to these promos.
So we're not going to make you listen to one. Bye!
Brought to you by the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast where Joe and Tony watch all of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Available on the ESO Network or wherever else you get podcasts from.
But honestly, where else would you go?
WatchYourRassilon.com?
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.